listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream.
We're going to talk college football here on Drive Time Sports. Now that the dust has settled a little bit from the national championship game on Monday already, you turn your attention to the NFL draft if you're heavy into college football. And that's what we're going to talk about right now with Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports and also the USA Today. Antoine, a pleasure as always to get you on the show. Thank you.
What's going on, Jordan?
Hey, you know what? I'm a little bit sad that there's no college football to talk about this weekend. I'm like grasping at straws right now. I know we have the NFL, but I'm ready for the NFL draft.
I kind of am too, because now the next 3 months is going to really consist of draft talk from here until the draft gets started. So, yeah, it's going to be, if you don't like draft talk, you don't like the NFL draft, you're going to have a hard time with the next few months or so.
Yep, no question about it. Before we talk about the NFL draft and some of the prospects that have declared and where you see them going and the grades that you would give them, I got to get your thought on the national championship game, because you and I shared the same opinion all year long. I thought Georgia was the team to beat all season long. I thought Georgia had every opportunity in the world to win that game, but at the end, it was Alabama coming through. I got to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Georgia was in control, at least for the same like almost three quarters, and you know, Alabama got back in it. Obviously, the turn of the tide changed when Jalen Hurts got benched and they put the freshman lefty in there. And, you know, things just started to click for the Alabama offense. He ended up throwing three touchdowns and really just settling down the whole offense. They weren't able to run the ball like I know they would like to, but it really provided stability for the Crimson Tide. And then that allowed their defense to kind of just settle down and not be on the field as long. So, yeah, obviously the quarterback change and Nick Saban's decision to do it really changed the whole complexion of the game.
There's plenty of NFL talent in this game, and we talked about that a little bit earlier this week on the show. But as far as, you know, shifting the attention and going to the NFL draft and looking at some of the top prospects, who's the guy in that national championship game that you looked at as a can't-miss prospect, or did you see one at all?
Yeah, oh yeah, I saw a few, but two really come to mind for me is really Roquan Smith from Georgia, outstanding linebacker, even in the loss day. He was just everywhere around the football. No matter if he made the tackle or he was just, you know, near the football, he was always around the ball, the person that, or the ball carrier. So I think for me, he's definitely a can't-miss prospect in that whole respect of a linebacker. I know he's not that big at 6'1", 225 pounds, but he's a playmaker, and I think he's going to I compare him kind of to Patrick Willis, how he played with the San Francisco 49ers. So I think he's definitely a guy to watch out for. Also, Micah Fitzpatrick as well, defensive back, can play safety, can play cornerback. I think he's going to be taken in the top 5 or 10 in the NFL draft out of Alabama. Calvin Ridley, probably the number one wide receiver coming out for the Crimson Tide. Also, South Florida kid, definitely think he's also a player that is going to make some team very happy, can stretch the field, good ball, pass catcher, and a great route runner. So those are the three names that really come to mind when watching this game.
As far as looking in the interior, I think another possible top 10 pick in this NFL draft is going to be Daron Payne as well at a defensive tackle spot. Those guys don't necessarily always get the love that they probably should. But again, you want to talk about winning the battle in the trenches. Don't look any further than Payne, because again, here's a stud coming out of Alabama as well.
Yeah, I definitely think he's somebody that's also going to be taken in the first round as well. There's a lot of talent on that field on Monday night. I think you're going to have upwards to maybe 6 or 7 players drafted in the first round between the two teams. And then that's not even counting the running backs from Georgia, Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel, who I think will probably be taken in the second or third round, possibly. So, yeah, you got a ton of NFL talent, and it was just fun to watch, no matter who you were rooting for.
There's always a lot of talk around the quarterbacks that declare. And again, I think a lot of the attention has gone to Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, and we've had conversations about those two individuals. But let's look at some of the other classmen that have now declared for the NFL draft. We look out of the backfield, okay, because running back is such an interesting position right now in the NFL. There for a while, there was kind of a lull. It seemed like teams were afraid to take guys in the first round. And then you had the likes of Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott, Melvin Gordon. And it seems like it's a trend that's starting to come back a little bit now. Darius Geis Chase is declared for the NFL draft. Josh Adams is declared for the draft as well. So you can throw them in the mix with the likes of, a Saquon Barkley, who I think now, Saquon Barkley, in my mind, probably gets some run at potentially being the number one overall pick in this draft, as crazy as that sounds. But the running back group has really picked up now over the last few weeks with a couple of guys declaring.
Yeah, it's deep. It's definitely as deep as it's been. I know last year you hit it right on the head. It's really changed. I remember after Trent Richardson was taken in the first round early on, a lot of teams were scared to take a running back in the first round, and they were saying, "Well, we're not going to do it." They kind of devalued the position, and then all of a sudden, yeah, you have a Todd Gurley, you have Ezekiel Elliott, you have a Leonard Fournette that completely just changes the whole smell of your football team. I always thought running backs were valuable. It's just a matter of how good they are. And I think this class, I don't know if you have a Leonard Fournette in this particular class, or I know Christian McCaffrey, he didn't put up big stats running the ball, but he was the Panthers' leading wide receiver. So I don't know if you're going to have those type of running backs in this draft, but you do have some very, very good talented ones. And, yeah, Adams I like, obviously Barkley. I think the Cleveland Browns may take him. They have two picks in the top four. And then you talk about, you talk about Derrick Guice, who I also think will be a first-round pick. You may have upwards to three or four running backs taken in this draft, and that's something that was rarely ever happened in the last few years.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at the SEC, we didn't even mention Nick Chubb or Kerryon Johnson. I mean, there's a lot of individuals in this draft that can get some run for late first round, early second round to late second round picks.
Yeah, you're gonna have a ton. I think in the second round, I think you're going to have a ton that come off the board. And, yeah, Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, I definitely think are second or third round picks. I probably would go with Michelle a little bit over Chubb, but either way, I think you're going to both of them are going to get drafted pretty high. They have a ton, especially in the SEC, a ton of really good running backs. And, yeah, you're going to see a ton, like it could be between the second and third round, you might see 10 of them. That's how good, and I think that's how much the running back position has really changed. And you look at what Jacksonville was able to do this year. Blake Bortles, I know, has struggled recently, obviously struggled last week against the Buffalo Bills, but Jacksonville's probably not in this position in the playoffs if it wasn't for Leonard Fournette, and also their defense as well. I think the addition of Calais Campbell also made a big difference as well.
I can throw one more running back name out there, and we've talked a lot about this guy being a Pac-12 affiliate here. Ronald Jones. I was a big Ronald Jones guy at USC. I don't know that he ever lived up to his potential there. They did have kind of a two-headed monster out of the backfield, and it just seemed like USC never really reached their full potential throughout the year offensively as a whole. This is a guy I wouldn't sleep on. I like Ronald Jones a lot. I think he's one of the top talents at the running back position as well.
I think he's definitely the running back that teams in the NFL will like, so because he can catch the ball at the backfield. He also plays special teams, and he obviously can run the football effectively. So I know he didn't live up. He might not lived up to the billing that a lot of people expected him to be, but I think he's a perfect running back for the NFL. I'm not saying he's going to be a star like Ezekiel Elliott or anything like that, but I think he's somewhere a running back that's going to be in the league for, 8 or 9 years, just because of all his versatility and what he's able to do on the field.
Again, we're being joined right now by Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports in the USA Today as we talk some college football. Let's step away from draft and from players that have declared. This is one thing, Antoine, and it's kind of off the topic, but it's one thing that has just stood out to me, the amount of money that these colleges are now throwing at coordinators. I mean, we just watched Mike Elko get an unprecedented amount of money to leave Notre Dame and go to Texas A&M, $2 million to become their defensive coordinator. Is this the new trend in college football? Is this something that we're going to be seeing for a long time, a lot of money being thrown at coordinators to build almost like dream team-style coaching staffs?
Yeah, I think so, especially a school like a Texas A&M that has endless amounts of money. I actually think they're bringing in more revenue than University of Texas right now. And that's really saying something, considering how much money it goes into that university. But, yeah, obviously Jimbo's making $7.5 million. He's going to try to win there quickly as possible. He felt like Florida State wasn't doing enough for his staff. So I think that's partly the reason why he ended up leaving the Seminoles. Obviously, the season that he had this year didn't help the situation. But, yeah, I think you're definitely going to answer your question. I think you're going to see that more and more, especially with the big-time programs. If they see somebody, they want, and then it's all about the money, and they're going to just go ahead and pony it up and ante it up and get these guys what they want. And you're going to see the rich get richer, especially the large universities.
We're talking about coordinators and throwing all this money at the entire coaching staff. All of a sudden, the Arizona Wildcats don't have a coach anymore. I mean, that kind of came out of the blue. I think it was kind of hand in hand. Yeah, you could talk about the allegations against Rich Rodriguez, but at the same time, a lot of it had to do with the fact that Arizona wasn't necessarily performing this late in the game, and that's a terrible position to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, because you already had early signing day, and a lot of these guys thought Rich Rodriguez was going to be their guy, and now they've already signed, and he's out. They end up firing Rich Rodriguez. So I think in that theory, it was wrong. I know their administration said they'd already made the decision to fire Rich Rodriguez, but why wait to do it now? It seems kind of just a shady move, especially to keep your recruits there. Because, now, if had they fired Rich Rodriguez earlier, those guys would have had a chance to go. So they probably would have went somewhere else because, let's just face it, recruits go they go where they feel comfortable with the coaches. It's not necessarily the program. It's more or less they love the coaching staff and things of that nature. So yeah, it's a little shady, and I think they're definitely behind the eight ball because now you're like, who's going to come in and be the head coach? And
yeah.
January 11th right now, and then you're going to have the other signing period coming up in February.
It's a strange position to be in. Speaking of coaches, maybe you can shed some light on this. Why is Kevin Sumlin not have a job right now? And why is he not the front runner? Like, if I'm Arizona and I fire Rich Rodriguez in January and Kevin Sumlin is available, I'm knocking on his door before I fire Rich Rodriguez.
Yeah, that's probably what I would have done as well. I would have talked to him, see if he would have been interested in that. It's no reason. I think he would have came in and they would have been able to win now, especially what they have at the quarterback position with Tate there. Imagine him with Kevin Sumlin and his offense. You're talking about a team that could potentially, contend in the Pac-12 South next year. That's how good they are. We're not talking about a bare bones program there in Arizona. Rich Rodriguez did a good job recruiting. You have a really good, outstanding quarterback who's going to make plays and potentially be a Heisman Trophy candidate next year.
Yeah, it's a really crazy scenario for Arizona right now. Again, I think Sumlin should be their guy, hands down. Antoine, before I let you go, we've talked for the last 16, 17 weeks about college football here on the show. Outside of the national championship, what's the most memorable moment for you of this college football season, or maybe the most history-altering moment of the college football season? Does one stand out to you?
I don't know about history moment. I know it was a moment. One of the plays that really stood out to me was the Iowa-Ohio State game when Iowa just pretty much beat down Ohio State. And, of course, it ended up costing them a chance to be in the 14 playoff. And I remember that interception from that game. It just keeps going on my mind. The one-handed catch is one of the greatest interceptions I've ever seen. And the Notre Dame-Miami game, I was there. I know you don't want to hear about that, but
aye.
That scene there, and yeah, it was probably the loudest I've ever heard that stadium, and kind of just symbolized Miami starting to come back into national relevance again. And obviously, the Rose Bowl. We talked about that last week. How great of a game that was. I know Georgia didn't win the national title, but yeah, that was definitely one of the classic Rose Bowls of all time.
Does Central Florida going 13-0, does it at least spark the brain of, within the next 5 years or so, expanding to an 18 playoff? Like, is this something that we can look back on in 5 years and say, yeah, you know what, maybe that was responsible for getting the car in motion of expanding to eight teams?
Yeah, I think so. I think the talk has started. The dialogue is going to start. They're getting that 18 playoff. The question would be is, if you do have an 18 playoff, if you would have had one this year, would Central Florida have been in it anyway? No. If you look at the rankings, they wouldn't have been. So I definitely think the dialogue is going to start. The question is, if you start have an 18 playoff, then just kind of devalue the bowl system anyway, something that college football doesn't want. And two, would just the Big Cats, and how would any Big Cats to continue to be in the playoff? Would you have a team like Central Florida or a team like Boise State or San Diego State or team or something like that be able to crack the top eight? I don't know. How would they run it? Would it be automatic bowl bids when if you win your conference if you're a Power Five and have three at larges? So it's going to be an interesting dialogue that's going to start. But yeah, I definitely can see that trending in that direction.
Antoine, it's always fun to pick your brain, talk some college football. We get a little bit of a dead time, but hopefully we'll catch up between now and the NFL draft. In the meantime, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
You find me at Athlon Sports. Also find me Dolphins Wire USA Today. And we're just going to start talking about reviewing the year as far as teams and what to look out for next year and some of the teams to watch out for. Miami Hurricanes are definitely one of the teams, and I expect them to probably be a top 10 team when the preseason rankings come out in August.
All right, Antoine, it's always fun. Thank you again for the time today.
Yeah, no problem.
We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.